AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Happy Friday, everybody. The free-for-all regulars and one new voice are ready to roll. But first, we'll make time to clear up some of the speculation about some of the initiatives coming out of the Biden administration that have done more than raise a few eyebrows in farm country.
Live from Ahoy Chip Morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we're pleased to welcome USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Then it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wasemeyer, Sean Haney, and we welcome Chris Gibbs, Chairman of Rural Voices USA. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, at long last, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis. Yeah, it's good to come back and find the show right where I left it. It was right there.
We barely made it. Yesterday was an oatmeal cookie morning. Yesterday was a macaroon afternoon. The running joke was there's no Chip involved in either of those cookies. So glad to be back aboard the SS Ahoy Chip.
Well, I'm glad to be back myself. Glad to be back. Yes. We had a wonderful 3 days spending time with family and friends, saying goodbye to my mom. Mm-hmm. Fabulous time, great celebration.
Good.
And it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. It might seem weird to say that, but it was a lot of fun. We had family members there that haven't been together for several years, Davis.
Right.
So
right.
You know, we've had our little side family gatherings, but to get everybody together in one spot at one time, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely fabulous.
And a celebration of life. What a great thing. What
you
a great
bet.
Thing. Yes.
You bet. So, man, we got a lot to talk about today. The conversation with Secretary Vilsack, Jim Wiesmeyer, and I had that this morning already, and it's going to be coming to you here in the next segment. But Secretary Vilsack has shown some frustration over how some of the initiatives from the Biden administration, from USDA, have been reacted to very quickly in farm country. And you know what? Hey, if that's not we kind of talk about it a little bit. If that's not the reaction you want, let's get some details right up front on some of these issues.
Right.
And it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, because it does seem like a lot that we've heard from him over the last, I would say the last week and a half, have been to reassure concerns that could have possibly been reassured with just some simple details on the front end.
Right, and we have some more of those details in the conversation with Secretary Vilsack this morning. So, it'll be very good. And I know Chris Gibbs, new voice here on the free-for-all, has been following some of these issues very, very closely. So looking forward to getting Chris's take on some of the happenings from the Biden administration and USDA. Okay, let's find out what else is going on in the news. What do you got, man?
Well, Chip, official gauges across China's economy fell short of expectations in April, suggesting that the country's strong pandemic bounce back is starting to lose some momentum. China's Statistics Bureau said the National Purchasing Managers Index for Manufacturing fell, while global chip shortages, international logistics jams, and rising delivery costs weighed on operations. The official readings also showed continued softness in the service sector, underscoring concerns among economists that domestic spending, that's a persistent weak point in the Chinese recovery, would hold back China's economy in the coming months. Chip.
You know, it's interesting that the comments about the global chip shortages, some softness in the service sector. These are still pandemic related one way or another. And, you know, maybe the initial surge that we saw in China's economy from the pandemic low is just leveling off now. And a little bit more boring old business as usual stuff. But they've got a lot. There's some catch up work that needs to be done in this.
Oh, for sure. And shortages of all kinds of stuff all up and down
all
the supply
over.
Chain were, right. were topics of conversation this week in your absence.
Yeah.
Well, the Eurozone economy shrank at the beginning of 2021 for the second consecutive quarter, entering its second technical recession in a year. Across the 19 countries that use the euro as their currency, gross domestic product fell by 0.6% in the first quarter, the European Union's statistics agency Eurostat said today. Now, on a stronger note, shares of airlines, railroads, and trucking companies are rolling to their longest streak of weekly gains in more than a century, fueled by investor optimism that a resurgence in economic growth will boost profits at transportation companies. Also, New York City businesses will be allowed to open fully on July 1, and cruise lines will resume operations later this summer.
Yeah.
So, some glimmers of hope here.
Yeah, absolutely, there are. It feels like they are at least now making plans for the reopening of and the full reopening of activity, economy, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. Yeah. The only way that that is going to happen is if the consumer confidence has come back. And I feel like we're making good progress there.
Agreed. Well, in comments submitted to USDA regarding climate policy priorities, the National Grain and Feed Association urged the agency to implement climate smart policies in a manner that allows U.S. ag producers and ag businesses to enhance income without idling land or distorting planting and marketing decisions. Thursday was the last day for recommendations to be filed with USDA. Chip, as of this morning, over 1,800 comments mm-hmm. had been posted on that matter.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. We're going to be talking, we will talk with Secretary Vilsack about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the second appearance before Congress on the fiscal year 2022 budget for the Environmental Protection Agency, they did not see issues on biofuels raised, nor was there a major focus on any agricultural regulatory issues. That's in the House Appropriations Subcommittee session. Now, EPA Administrator Michael Riggin observed at a Senate hearing that there needs to be a glide path forward toward alternatives like EVs and that ethanol plays a significant role in providing those resources. Good to see the EPA administrator recognizing ethanol as a possible helper here.
It certainly is. And this is something, as you know, that we have been talking about, arguing for on AgriTalk for quite some time. And when you hear it described as a glide path toward mm-hmm. alternatives like EVs, glide paths take a long time when we're talking about the government and an overhaul of the consumer vehicle fleet and mm-hmm. all of that. I mean, we're talking not just years, we're talking decades before we get to it.
And it's not like you said warp speed toward alternatives like EVs, right?
Right.
China's rapid development of a digital version of the yuan will not push the Federal Reserve to rush to its own digital currency project, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said earlier this week. He added that China's approach would not work in the United States. Shameless plug for AgriTalk here. I spoke at length on this and related matters with Todd Bubba Horowitz on the afternoon edition of AgriTalk just this last Wednesday. And finally, Chip, let me hit this. According to the U.S. attaché in China, Chinese swine numbers are not likely to rebound until at least mid-2021. The incorporation of commercial gilts into the breeding herd lowered overall productivity of the herd. The attaché also notes that some producers are delaying restocking due to concerns about new strains and outbreaks, high piglet prices, and feed costs. Chip?
All right. Yeah, a lot for us to talk about on today's free-for-all. But first... Sure. Coming up next, we got the conversation with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're going to waste zero time and get straight to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Secretary Vilsack, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I'm well, Chip, and I hope you're well also.
You bet. You bet. We also have Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer on the line. Jim, welcome.
Welcome, and always good to have the Ag Secretary on.
Absolutely. Okay. Secretary Vilsack, we've seen some big spending plans come from, well, both sides, but the Biden administration is spearheading a lot of the spending proposals. And when I talk with farmers about it, the thing that they're concerned most about is how we're going to pay for it and some of the tax proposals that are out there. The elimination of the step-up in basis, the reduction in the exemptions, and so on. What's your message to the agricultural community, the small business community, when it comes to some of these tax proposals from the White House?
Well, Chip, when the president was putting his plan together, I made sure the folks at the White House understood and appreciated the unique situation that you have on the farm. As they out in the countryside, a lot of farmers are land rich but cash poor, and the idea of increased taxes makes it more difficult sometimes for farm families to keep the farm, and that they needed to structure the tax programs in a way that didn't necessarily result in farms having to be sold or lost. And I think they responded to that. First and foremost, they did not touch the estate tax or the gift tax. I think people were concerned about that happening. That did not happen. The estate tax and the gift tax are the same. On stepped up basis, essentially what they carved out an exception for family-owned businesses and for farms. Essentially, as long as the family continues to own the business or the farm, as long as they continue to operate the farm, there is no capital gains. There's no tax owed. It's business as usual. If the decision is made by the family to sell the farm, then the farmer and spouse each have $1 million exemption. So you have to have more than $2 million in gain before you are assessed tax. If a home is located, if the farm homestead is located on the farm, there's another $500,000 exemption. So you'd have $2.5 million of exemptions. That's going to cover 98.5% of the farms in this country. The other 1.5% are the farms that are owned by the very, 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 very wealthy. And if there is a tax to be paid in those very limited circumstances, you have 15 years to pay it at a very small and low interest rate. So no farm's going to have to be sold. No farm's going to be lost as a result of this. The folks who are paying for this are the folks who have done incredibly well over time and have a tremendous amount of assets. We're talking about people that are very, very wealthy.
I think that answers it for us, Jim. I want to move on because I've got a long list of items to cover here.
Real quick one, Chip. Mr. Secretary, I don't know whether you've had the time to look at Farm Bureau's analysis of this. They see a far more significant impact than, you know, some of the readout by the, you know, Biden administration officials. You know, what do you say?
Well, I have not yet had an opportunity to fully read the readout, but my concern about it was I think a lot of that information was done before the plan was actually announced. And so I think there was an assumption that stepped up basis was going to be stepped up in every case for all farm families. That's not with the exemptions. That's not necessarily the case. We're talking about $1 million exemption per individual. That's a significant amount of gain before you have any concern about tax. There is also a significant number of ways in which that tax can be avoided through a series of gifts over time and with the gift tax exemptions that exist. So there are a lot of ways in which, and I'm confident when I say 98.5% of the farms aren't going to be affected by this based on the plan. And I think the Farm Bureau was making the assumption based on concerns at the outset that there would be no exemption, there would be no carve out for the family farm, but there is a carve out. If the farm is being operated and owned by the family, there is no stepped up basis concern. There's no capital gains due. There's no tax due.
Okay.
If the farm is sold, $1 million exemption per person, $2.5 million. If there's a homestead on the farm, that's a fairly significant amount of gain that you have to have before you even start thinking about having to pay a tax.
Okay, switching gears, because in this first 100 days, we go back to an executive order that was signed in January highlighting the 30 by 30 to we know what the details or what the concept is on the 30 by 30. There's been a high level of concern over the lack of details on this, Secretary Vilsack. What's the message to farmers?
Well, first of all, the reason why we've taken a while to formulate the details is because we were doing a series of listening sessions with farmers. We wanted input from farmers. We wanted the ability, and the executive order specifically directed the Department of Agriculture and other departments to reach out to farmers, ranchers, and producers to ask for their input. So there have been a series of meetings over the last several months to get input from farmers. And I don't think anybody can be critical of that. And what's interesting about this is, again, a lot of rumors, a lot of concerns before anyone actually sees the plan. With 30 by 30, I think what they're going to find is the principles behind it are very consistent with what farmers want to see. They want to see a respect and a recognition of private land ownership. They want voluntary. They don't want mandated. They don't want anybody taking their land away. They want to be provided incentives and encouragement to do what they're already doing on the land in terms of conservation. I think that's what you're going to see when the report is issued. You're going to see a set of principles that are very, very consistent with what we heard from farmers and what they believe will work best for expansion of conservation. This is about expanding conservation. This is not about taking people's land away from them. This is about encouraging people to continue to do what they're doing and figure out ways in which we can encourage them to do more with the right kind of incentives.
All right, Jim, follow up on that one.
Well, will there be a public comment period? I know that you met individually with farmers on this proposal, Mr. Secretary.
Well, we had to put a Federal Registry notice out on a variety of issues, asking a set of questions for folks to respond to. We gave folks, I think, 60 or 90 days to respond to that. So in a sense, there's been a public comment period. I think we received close to 1,700 comments on a variety of topics and issues. So in that sense, we've had that opportunity. And again, once people see the principles, I would be very surprised if people have concerns about this because they're going to see everything that they've told us they are concerned about being addressed very specifically about this.
Okay, very good. The Conservation Reserve Program, you've made some comments about how it could play a bigger role in the administration's climate plans. There's increased concern over competing with the federal government for access to land from the farm community out here. What's your comment to farmers on that?
Well, all of this is all that we've discussed here. The CRP, the 30 by 30, all it is really climate is all designed in the framework of more new and better markets, more new and better options for farmers to be able to have multiple ways to generate income from their farming operation. So on the CRP, it's just obviously voluntary. People can make the decision whether to put their land in the CRP. We're looking and focusing on highly erodible land. We're providing some flexibilities that make a shorter-term CRP commitment something that might be of interest to folks in the Upper Plains area in particular. Senator Thune had a set of suggestions about how we could make the SHIP program more effective, which we incorporated, ways in which we can encourage more outdoor recreational opportunities, which is also an economic driver, more hunting and fishing, wildlife habitat being protected, and again, providing farmers options. They can choose to participate in this program or they could choose not to. But if they choose to do so, we want to make sure that what they receive in the form of compensation is adequate and reasonable, not something that distorts the market in any way, but actually responds and is tailored to the market. And I think that's what we've done in providing a set of incentives and a set of ways in which rental payments can kind of meet the market, if you will, to give people options and choices.
Okay, very good. We've only got about a minute left here, but I got to ask, we're 100 days in now with the Biden administration. What's your takeaway?
More new and better market opportunities. The Biden administration is focused on that. It's focused on listening to farmers as reflected in the work it's done for everything from immigration with support for the Agricultural Modernization Workforce Act to carving out an exception for the stepped-up basis to even the American Jobs Plan, providing resources for climate-smart agriculture, for bio-based manufacturing, for support for the broadband expansion and for transportation improvements. And even, you know, recently the EPA basically acknowledging that waivers on the biofuel industry shouldn't be granted liberally. They should be very, very conservatively granted. All of those, I think, should be signals to the farm community that this is an administration that understands the significant contribution farmers make and is trying to be responsive to the need for better income opportunities for them.
Secretary Vilsack, it is always a pleasure to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. That is USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Jim Wiesmeyer will be back with me for the free-for-all next here on AgriTalk. You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world, they are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. My goodness, what a dynamic market week that we've had in here, Brian. Corn is trying to end the week on a strong note again, but we're still below the highs of the week.
Yeah, definitely. Ran up and pushed above $7. You know, it only took us a week to get above $7 from the time when we poked above $6 in the front month. But we have backed off those highs. No deliveries against May corn, not a surprise by any means. There were some deliveries against May soybeans, light, but still was a little bit of a shock to the market, and that put some pressure on us earlier on. But now we're trading with a mixed tone here mid-morning, so coming back a little bit. Soy oil's firmer, and the meal market's under a little bit of pressure this morning.
Yeah, very good. We had the spring wheat market is trying to respond to the stats can numbers, right?
Yeah, stats can and the dryness that continues up in the northern plains. You know, scattered light showers is about the best that they'll get, it sounds like, over the next couple weeks. And so that situation definitely isn't going to improve a whole lot. Maybe just a little bit of topsoil help, but not much for subsoil.
Yep, hogs pushing hard to the upside.
Yeah, so the hog market, you know, it's we've made new highs in every contract except for June, and it's close, so I think that market continues to watch China and what's going on there, and there's some reports out by the attaché that mid-year at best before the hog herd rebounds in China. That's probably supporting us this morning.
Yeah, steady to slightly lower in the feeder cattle trade, and we've got some mixed action going in live cattle futures. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you. She's
gone. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Florey. We've got the free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, is still with me. Jim, real quick, what caught your ear in the conversation with Secretary Vilsack?
He's a great spokesman for the Biden administration, quite articulate, and I wish they would have had some of his comments out a while ago, Chip, on these controversial issues.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the reasons that the anxiety built up was, I'm going to stick with is, is because we are still looking for some of the details on these proposals from the Biden administration. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How are you this morning, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be here.
Good, good, good. And a new voice. We have Chris Gibbs with us. Chris is the chairman of the Rural Voices USA. Chris, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great from West Central Ohio. Thanks to the gang for tagging me along and looking forward to it. Let's go.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with you. You know, Secretary Vilsack's comments about the proposed changes to the tax plan, the estate taxes specifically, he's basically said there's enough protection in there, that 98.5%. He was very specific with that. 98.5% of the U.S. farms won't be paying any of the estate tax. Chris, I know you've been watching it. Is that your read on this?
Well, it is, and I was glad, you know, certainly we're glad that the secretary acknowledged that and made that known to the administration, to the White House, from his perspective, that there was concern out here. This is really, really important to me. I spent 30 years with USDA in Farm Service Agency, and we own and operate 560 acres that we kind of started from scratch. And the only reason I put that together was to pass it down through the generations. And so I've got that all set up, trust and so forth. I got a grandchild, grandson on the, and another one on the way. Yeah. This is what I was doing for those people, or for those young people, is passing that down. So I thought I had it set up. And then when the Senate, a couple members of the Senate, come out with a stepped up basis plan, and then it almost mimicked what the Biden administration came out, I went, whoa, let's get some details on this. So I'm glad that the secretary knows that it's a problem, that their messaging out here was a little bit out of sync. But I feel a lot better about it. I feel a lot better about it now.
Okay, good. Jim, should he?
I think so. Well, okay. I just go to the numbers, and I think Vilsack did talk to the Treasury, you know, department official, so I think he did have an impact on this.
You know, he's going to take a proactive approach when it comes to issues like this. He's got a history of that, Jim. We can't forget it. I'm talking about Vilsack. And he understands a lot of the issues that we are dealing with in farm country. I'm not saying that he's going to be right 100% of the time, and I'm not saying that, hey, we just need to let him do what he's going to do because he's going to do it right every time. We're going to keep tabs, of course, but I feel like, Haney, we talked about this last week, the conversation that happens around these proposals, even before the details come out, they are necessary conversations to make sure that the end result is what it should be, right?
Well, absolutely, Chip, because you want to provide some of those wake-up calls of, like, you know, unintended consequences, right? Where it's like, oh, we were not aware of that, and thank you very much for having that conversation. You know, I think when it comes to taxation, it involves things like estates. You know, we have enough problems in farm succession, like with how things currently are, trying to get the farm passed on to the next generation. And we can't have changes in taxes and tax structure be the reason. We don't need more inhibitors, is what I'm trying to say. We need to make it easier, and because that's the farm future. So many people are farming for that legacy, and you know, having future generations farm that same land or ranch that same land, and so taxes can't get in the way of that.
Right. Okay, guys. After after the conversation aired, a couple of questions came in. Chris, I'll shoot this one to you first. Is the federal government going to be out bidding against farmers to set ground aside, calling it conservation? And what we're talking about here, of course, is USDA's plans to use the CRP as part of the climate plan for the Biden administration.
Well, I don't see that, and there's no history of that over, again, as a county executive director for FSA, I managed that CRP program for 30 years, and we never tried to outbid. We always had a soil rental rate set up. As you folks well know, there's a soil rental rate that matched similarly similar ground. And so it was an even competition. Matter of fact, the legislators, the House managers and so forth that wrote every farm bill always said in there that we're not going to be in the business of competing for land. So I don't see that. I don't see that as a problem.
Okay. Now, I've got some very good examples of some really good ground mm-hmm. that has been pulled out of production, and it's now growing flowers that could have remained in production, and some would argue should have remained in production, that would have could have provided an opportunity for a young farmer to get in there and bid for some of that ground. But when you're talking about $350 plus rental rates on some pollinator ground, Chris, that's hard for a young farmer to compete.
Sure, sure. And I understand yeah. that. And I don't have direct direct experience with that kind of rental rate here in Western Ohio.
Right.
What we're looking at in CRP is very small acreages, filter strips, grass waterways, buffer strips, something like that. It's rare, very rare in Ohio and many parts of the Midwest to have full fields now taken out because you can't get them bid in. Number one, there's not that many signups. And then even when there is a sign up, the land isn't sensitive enough to score high enough to be able to enroll. So
yeah.
If you got an example, take it at your word, you got $350 an acre land. I'm assuming you're talking rental rate. I don't have that experience here. Not even
yeah.
close. Not even
yeah.
close.
Yeah, and at Hort Versailles here in my neck of the woods, sure. Chris chimed in on Twitter. He says, yes, USDA will be outbidding farmers, CRP land. It has happened before, and we have seen it happen here. And, Jim, it's one of the biggest concerns when we talk to farmers about the buildup of conservation acres, right? Jim, you on mute? Are you?
Yeah, Chip. Yeah. You know, this okay. is why former House Ag Committee Chair, you know, Chairman Colin Peterson got in the last farm bill a restructuring of those CRP rental rates, because he and other farm state lawmakers, both Democrat and Republican, thought they were, you know, causing some dislocations in some areas. You know, mm-hmm. so it'll be curious to see what the incentive payments are ahead. I want to add one other thing real quickly, Chip, on the tax provisions.
Yep.
I'm content that you know, Vilsack was quite articulate. However, they could still change relative to ongoing negotiations in the House and Senate. So yeah. I would watch those, because those liberal lawmakers from spend happy states who want the deduction for the salt tax could yeah. get back into this estate planning language. So I would watch that.
Yeah. Chris, do you agree with that?
I would agree with that in this sense.
Yeah.
That we've got a long way to go. Let's remind our listeners that Congress writes legislation, not the White House. And this is a proposal, maybe even similar or no different than what another president would put out as a budget, something that, well, this is our plan. Well, this is what the administration wants, but we've got a long way to go. So that's why we want to make sure we have a voice, and that's what Rural Voices USA is doing. Make sure that rural America has a voice here. And I think Secretary Vilsack has heard that. One thing that I have a question of from the administering program standpoint is, what's the definition of family? They haven't. Who's going to write it? Is it going to be Treasury, IRS, USDA? Who's going to write the definition of family?
Yeah.
When you talk about the farm has to remain in the family.
Yeah, a buddy of mine texted me that he's going to need four more wives to make sure that –
Yeah. And then he's going to have another myriad of problems.
He's got other problems.
The emails I'm getting in from farmers are saying, what about those farms that stay family owned but are rented out? Does that count?
Right.
That's a very important to the farmland, because there's a lot that's owned by those who are no longer farming it.
Right. How much farmland is owned by 85-year-old widows?
Yeah, a lot of good farmland is owned by 80-year-old widows. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the question. So what's the good news here? Let's pick out some good news. The good news is that the secretary in the White House are listening to those concerns. So let's continue to dialogue and not just say, oh my, the sky is falling.
We got a long way to go here.
We got a long way to go, and we've got a voice. We're going to use
it. Yeah, very good. Very good.
And need to keep the pressure on those members of Congress to make sure this goes the way that agriculture needs it to go. And it's something that's realistic and practical.
Yeah, and Haney, to encourage those lawmakers to engage in the conversation themselves. So,
you know, one thing, Chip, this estate tax thing for me has always been a red herring up to this point. Because if you do just a little bit of planning, a little bit of estate planning, and we were at, $11.7 or $11 million per person times two is $22 million exemptions. It's going to go down to $5 million in 2026. Well, okay, that was plenty.
That's right. Chris, we need to take a break. We'll pick the conversation up next.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
We got the free-for-all going on today's AgriTalk. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. And Chris Gibbs, Chairman of Rural Voices USA. Chris, you were making a point at the end of the last segment about the estate tax exemptions. Finish that up for us.
Yeah, very briefly, and thanks. I'll tell you what, this, in my view, and I'll probably start a Twitter storm here, but that's okay. This, in my view, has been a red herring for years, maybe even decades, is that farm advocacy groups and state and House representative, congressmen and women, they have always fomented up the agriculture community saying, oh, there's this tax and you're going to lose a farm, et cetera. That is extremely rare. And particularly in this era where at this moment we have $11 million exemption times two people, a husband and a spouse, and it's going to roll back to $5 million in 2026 with just a little bit of estate planning, just a little bit. There's all kinds of tools out there. There is no reason that any of these farms should pay any, if little, very, very little tax.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, Jim, it's at the point that Chris made earlier is that it's still a fluid situation. We just need to keep talking about this and we just need to keep talking about it, right?
Well, that's always the role of commodity and farm groups and lobbyists, et cetera. Absolutely, they play a role because it can change, as we said, in the legislative process. And
right.
And you don't know in the tail end of a Congress how something can sneak in.
Right, right. Okay, Jim, Biden had a big speech this week. How did it play in farm country?
Hey, big spender, you know, they like free money too, but they know somebody's going to eventually have to pay for it. And if any farmer, this is what I'm getting, if they thought Biden was moderate, that's not the case anymore because AOC is saying he's surprising her from being as, quote, progressive, meaning far left, as she thought he might not be.
Hmm. Haney, is that your take?
Yeah, I'm just not sure. The prior administration had no trouble spending money either.
Right.
It's just that's kind of the environment we're in. I thought there was a really good article this yesterday in the Washington Post from a physician talking about how the missed opportunity for Biden was just the way they portrayed a post-vaccination world in terms of everybody being masked, some people being double masked there. For people that were vaccinated, if they're trying to sell vaccinations to Americans to try to get to herd immunity, I really don't think Biden provided the right messaging this week at his speech.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. It was report day for you, Haney. What did we learn from StatsCan?
Yeah, we had a StatsCan report earlier this week, dryness on the Western Canadian prairies, Chip. We had spring wheat down 8.8%. That's about 1.6 million acres. It is dry. Same situation in parts of Montana, North Dakota. Like North Dakota is like 98% under drought. So farmers moving away from spring wheat. Barley, though, feed barley, the feed market, really, really good. Quality not as important in that case, right? Up like 14%, 1.1 million acres. So farmers trying to figure out what to do with it being so dry on the southern tip. The big news this week is the federal government of Canada has put back to work legislation. It passed yesterday in the House, and it's going to be in the Senate today. Back to work legislation for the Port of Montreal. That impacts U.S. dry bean growers, where a lot of those dry beans get exported through the Port of Montreal. So there's a U.S. Angle of that story for you.
Gotcha. All right. Jim, at the start of the show, we had a caller ask about staffing at USDA county offices, the FSA offices, when they were going to get back to normal. What's the status?
Well, USDA is told by an outside group on the percentage basis, but, you know, they should be getting back to normal if they base anything on reality.
Well, and if they've been vaccinated, like Sean was just talking about.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Chris, what as a former administrator, what's your take there?
Well, you know what? The Biden administration has a wonderful opportunity in rural America, and they need access to rural America. The last election proved that. So they have a wonderful opportunity here to speak directly to farmers for all of these programs, whether it's the 30-30, whether it's carbon sequestration, whether it's biofuels, whether it's you name it, to speak to farmers directly from these FSA offices. And so we got a couple things going on. Number one, the offices are not always open at the moment. Depending on your state, you might have to get an appointment, et cetera. But you know what farmers like? Every farmer is like this. They want to go in and talk to that program technician, to talk to that county executive director. They want say, hey, you know my farm down at the Smith farm. You know that big tree. I need to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want to sign this up. And they want to communicate. That's how farmers work. So the Biden administration, in my view, has missed an opportunity here to make sure those offices are open. And moreover, many people don't realize this, is that the state committees are appointed that manage each state's federal farm programs through Farm Service Agency, which, by the way, all of the dollars that come out of CCC come out of these offices.
Sure.
That's those state committees and that state executive director are appointed. And their job is to give a full-throated representation for the administration, okay? The Trump appointees, except for the state executive directors, the Trump appointees are still there. They've never been replaced. What a missed opportunity. A missed opportunity.
That's something.
Can you imagine the Trump appointees giving a full-throated representation for 30-30 or?
No.
But yeah, no. So there you are.
Absolutely. Jim, what you watching closest this next week?
Well, I'm going to Kansas City for a live presentation Tuesday to the Crop Insurance Agent, SEPA. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Fantastic. Love to hear that you're back out there, man. Haney, what about you? What are you watching?
Chip, all attention is tomorrow morning. I got a big golf game with my two sons. So that all attention is on that.
100% attention. I love that. Chris, what about you? What are you watching this week?
Well, I'm watching this week. I'm watching the weather. I want to get back to planting corn. And here in West Central Ohio, we're maybe going to get a break in the next couple of days. And I'm going to hit it.
Excellent. Good stuff. Thank you so much, Chris. That is Chris Gibbs. He is the chairman of Rural Voices USDA. And, of course, Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture. Come back this afternoon. Bill Biederman, AgMarket.net, right here on AgriTalk.